Good morning. This is Roxanne Ferguson.
And I'm Seal Rosmalski. We're honored to serve as your hosts for the
Pathways to Service Rotary Roadshow.
Right here in Wilmington, Delaware, USA.
You know, Rotary International has been making a difference for over 112 years now since Paul Harris first founded the organization in 1905. And our local clubs here in District 7630 kicked things off in Delaware 10 years later in 1915. That's quite a legacy.
Yes, it is. And our hope here is to provide meaningful shows sharing the impact of Rotary and offer insight to those groups, organizations, and individuals living the Rotary motto of service above self.
Thank you for joining us today on WDEL 101.7 FM or 1150 AM on your radio dial. You can listen to podcasts of our programs by simply going to www.rotary7630.org and clicking on Pathways to Service and then onto the radio tower. You can also reach us by sending us an email to CEILROZ@Verizon.net. If you think of interesting topics you think we should be covering. Good morning and welcome to Pathways to Service, your Rotary Roadshow. I'm Seal.
And I'm Roxanne, and we are so blessed to have with us in studio today Dr. Rachmanda Campbell with the Reading Clinic Incorporated. Welcome.
Thank you.
We are
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So, the Reading Clinic, it sounds like we might know what it means, but tell us all about the Reading Clinic.
So the Reading Clinic, it is a nonprofit organization, and we provide advocacy for dyslexia, which is the most common reading slash language-based learning disability. It affects 1 in 5. And the reason advocacy is at the top of my platform is because most folks don't know what it is, they don't know what it means, or they may have been misinformed with the information that they have received.
So how did you get involved with Reading Clinic? How did this all come into play?
Well, I started out in education as an education major at Delaware State University, elementary education, and from there I moved forward with my master's degree working on reading background, reading disorders, and I obtained my certification as a reading specialist from St. Joseph's University in Philadelphia. Okay. And as a result, throughout those years between undergraduate, after I completed, I moved into the career of teaching. I started out teaching first grade and had the wonderful benefit of working with wonderful children, families, educators, all the way up through high school, college, and even on doctoral level.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so education has really been a platform. Regardless if you're teaching children, adolescents, high school students, college students, postgraduate education, I have seen how dyslexia has been present in all of those different age groups, all of those various ethnicities, various economic backgrounds. It has no specific identity in terms of age, race, ethnicity, or economic background. So it's really important for the advocacy through the Reading Clinic to make our community well-informed to help them understand what it is. And then when you find out what it is, what do you do about it? Because that is another roadblock. Now that I know what it is, as a parent, as a caregiver, even as an educator teaching in the classroom, what do I do? What are those next steps?
And I would imagine that it probably gets misdiagnosed or
Absolutely.
Different things. So how would someone know if they have dyslexia?
Yes, oftentimes it goes undiagnosed or
right.
It gets misdiagnosed. Oftentimes, families, what they will see as red flags or warning signs, if children have trouble with letter naming, letter sound association, for
mm-hmm.
instance, they may know their alphabet A through Z,
right.
but they may not know the individual sounds that those
oh.
letters make. Or they may know them sometimes, but they may not know them 5 minutes later. So letter naming, letter sound associations are extremely important, and also the correct pronunciation of those letter sounds. So, for instance, for the letter M, we want to correctly pronounce the sound as mm, for the letter R, rrr, for the letter L. Oftentimes, you may hear a child or even sometimes adults say la, and they make the connection L with la, but you're adding an extra sound. La is
right.
L-A-H or L-U-H,
yeah,
so you want to
L.
be very succinct,
yeah.
very specific, ooh. And it's really about the placement of our tongue. You know, oftentimes a lot of activities when we're doing with the children, they feel their throat, they feel, you know, the sides of their throat. They look in the mirror, look at their facial expression, they look at the placement of their tongue. So letter sound associations is one indicator. Also, rhyming patterns. If there is an inability to hear rhyming patterns, that is also a warning sign or a red flag. Because nursery rhymes, all of these skill sets are skill sets that children develop very early on, preschool, early
yes.
I'm thinking
first grade.
3-4 years
Absolutely,
old.
Yeah. Even before they enter formal education, language happens every day, you know, from what they hear through conversations with family, friends, if they're in preschool or kindergarten, nursery rhymes, big books. So those patterns, if they can't make the connection, that is a red flag also. And then oftentimes, even if they're exposed to various skill sets, and oftentimes in all of these preschool programs, elementary, early childhood in general, they have wonderful, colorful, engaging types of classroom settings. Mm-hmm. And so repetition is just a part of that environment. It's part of that experience for the children. And even with all of that repetition, if the child is still having difficulty retaining the information, and not only retaining it, but applying it in different settings, across different settings, that is also a red flag and a warning sign for families as well.
So really, parents are the first people to pick up.
Exactly. Parents are the first teachers. That's why our early education activities, programs in the communities are extremely important. Early intervention screeners, they're very important.
And to me, the layperson in this field, it sounds a lot like speech therapy might even help.
Absolutely. And oftentimes when families prior to them even coming to me, once I get the background from them, they will have shared that the child has been a part of speech and language or in the midst of speech and language through their elementary school or wherever they are in their educational career. It's very critical. Yes. And oftentimes, I will tell you something else that I've also observed from families. The child may have made an exit out of the speech and language component, but they still are exhibiting difficulties and challenges. And that is because they have been undiagnosed. It has not been identified. So there is a fine line between the speech and language services and the individual child still needing continued services because they have no identification or diagnosis of dyslexia.
And diagnosis isn't the big black mark it used to be.
Absolutely not. And in fact, there is a Dear Colleague letter that was issued from the U.S. Department of Education Office of Rehabilitative Services, and it specifically indicates, well, let me back up just a step. The reason that that letter was put out is because families, advocacy groups, educators in general were complaining, we hear all these issues, we know these issues are going on, how come they're not being properly addressed, whether it's a charter school, private, public, or, you know, Catholic school, and what the challenge is, the lack of information, the lack of awareness. So this is the reason that this letter was published in October of 2015. It specifically indicates that there is nothing in the educational system, nothing that would prohibit a school, a language arts institution, whether it's public, private, or parochial, from providing the screenings, the educational intervention, and even the testing. So what is extremely critical is that whether the child is diagnosed with dyslexia, which is the broad term, but you have dyscalculia, which is related to mathematics, you have dysgraphia, which is related to writing, it should properly be identified. So whether it's early intervention screening, eligibility determinations, and then after the testing has taken place, what are the results? All of that information should be accessible to the educators in that educational institution as well as the parents, the caregivers, so everybody is on the same page in providing the resources and support that that child needs. So nothing prohibits. The only thing that is prohibiting children from getting the proper services is lack of knowledge, lack of awareness, lack of resources, lack of early intervention screening in the various schools.
Now, is this something that happens with just children, or couldn't it be something that adults develop later on in life?
It is something that can be developed later on, and specifically with adults, unfortunately, because they are adults, they may have not received the proper services and identifications that they needed when they were children in school.
Right.
So there are various reasons why an individual presents with being dyslexia, with being dyslexic. And I do want to preface that dyslexia has nothing to do with intelligence. It has nothing to do with an individual's IQ.
Right.
An individual can be extremely intelligent, have average to above average intelligence. However, the disconnect between language, when we think about the prefix dys and dyslexia, there's a disconnect between the acquisition of language. So they could have had the most seasoned educator, the best teacher, a master teacher. They could have received all sorts of wonderful resources, RTI, response to intervention, extracurricular tutoring, after school on the weekends, and all of that extra support, and still not necessarily make the type of strides that they should be making in an effort for them to thrive. And that is because you can't properly intervene for an issue that you haven't even addressed or identified.
Whether you even know exists for
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
Yeah, you don't,
exactly.
don't know.
Exactly.
Wow.
Now, I would think that if I were a first-time parent.
Yes.
and I had a toddler, and they were mispronouncing or couldn't rhyme or some of the warning signs, that, you know, it might be funny.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it becomes a source of comedic relief, and I would imagine that that could go on for quite a while. I would think and hope that our educators have been given greater training in identifying some of these issues, because the child might develop some defense mechanisms.
Absolutely.
Based on how their parents reacted when they were young.
Absolutely.
And the parents wouldn't recognize it because they haven't had any training. Are educators being trained to see these types of warning signs?
Well, I will tell you and share with you that there is a major challenge with our pre-service teachers who are getting trained as education majors in our undergraduate programs at our colleges and institutions. The programs are wonderful. They're excellent programs to mm-hmm. prepare them as a teacher to teach to the masses. Mm-hmm. But when we speak about being able to identify certain areas of need, areas of weakness, that is where the challenge presents itself.
Okay.
Because the average educational program, whether it's elementary education, even special education,
right,
they don't necessarily have specialized curriculum as those students are matriculating through their 4 years prior to them receiving their certification. And I am even speaking of special education programs where those students will receive a dual certification.
Right.
So it's not to discredit that academic institution.
Right.
The institutions are wonderful,
right,
and they're doing an excellent job. It is just there is so much content and information that the teacher needs for the basic certification that, so for instance, I majored in elementary education. I have a master's degree with a reading specialist certification, supervision of curriculum and instruction, principal certification, and mm-hmm. a doctorate degree. But mm-hmm. even with all of that, I have gone above and beyond to seek additional certifications in the area of dyslexia. So it just requires a lot of background educational testing, test and measurements, understanding the different levels of dyslexia, the levels of manifestation.
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, to try to keep it as simplified as possible, we know that dyslexia is a broad term, but there's dyseidetic, there's dysidesia, and then there's dysiphonetic, and which all of that simply means mixed dyslexia. So no two individuals present the same way. You could have someone who presents one way who has more of a challenge with processing what they hear,
right,
another individual processing what they see, another individual processing what they hear and they see, depending on the content, who's presenting the content, how the content is presented. So there are a lot of factors, mm-hmm. and unfortunately, our pre-service teachers and many of our seasoned teachers may not have received that type of background. They may know, they may have some indicators, because teachers know.
Right.
There's a difference. Let me say, there's a difference between knowing and being able to articulate in a manner to the families with proper documentation,
right,
that the child is dyslexic, simply because schools tend not to test and evaluate for dyslexia. But again, going back to that letter from the U.S. Department of Education, there's nothing prohibiting them from doing that. So I share that to say, the average child, if there's a concern that they may need extra services, a parent may request that the school provide testing. The school will honor that request to test, but they are specifically testing to see if the child is eligible for special education services.
Gotcha.
The challenge with that is that the classroom teacher may say, okay, I see some things going on, but the test reveals that that child does not qualify for special education services. So if that child does not qualify for special education services, they just don't qualify, but they could still be dyslexic. And because the school has provided the testing that they normally test under that umbrella, they're not necessarily testing for dyslexia. So it's hidden. It gets missed. It gets unidentified. And that
right.
is where the major, major challenge. Pretty much every parent that comes to me or calls me, they are calling because they had an IEP. The IEP is not addressing the needs that they feel the child needs addressed.
Right.
They requested testing. They had testing. The testing is excellent testing. It's
mm-hmm.
very comprehensive, and it is necessary information to move that child forward. But they're not being tested for dyslexia. And so, again, this is where we have the challenge. The different levels from the educators, the classroom teachers, the reading specialist, and the parents and the child, you know, the whole dynamic, that missing piece mm-hmm. is the specific dyslexia testing.
Makes sense. So for listeners that are just joining us this morning, we're with Dr. Rachmanda Campbell. We're talking about issues with dyslexia and her amazing business called The Reading Clinic. incorporated. So share with us for folks that, you know, are curious about this, who may mm-hmm. want to get in touch with you, where can they take the kids? Can they go to their specific school district? Or how would they go about doing that?
Sure.
To work with you?
If there is a question or concern that something's going on with the child, that they may be dyslexic or what's going on, they can, I always request to families to build that communication with the school first, even
right.
before they contact me through
Absolutely.
The reading clinic.
Makes sense.
Because there should be a bridge between home and school, and the parents should feel a level of comfort mm-hmm. where their child attends every single day to ask any questions, to make any requests, mm-hmm. and to have information presented to them and explained to them accurately. If they have a concern, it is best for them to put a letter of request in writing and present that letter to the principal, the key person in charge, the principal, psychologist, reading specialist, ultimately contacting the school secretary first. The school
right.
secretaries are
yes.
our best friends.
They're the gatekeepers.
Yes, they are the gatekeepers, and they will be the go-to person. So that person, that main person, is different at every school, but kind. Mm-hmm. Those are the examples of individuals that would play a part in this conversation, in this process
right.
for the child. And in that letter, they should specifically state, and I impress upon specifically stating, I want my child tested for dyslexia. There's a difference between saying, okay, my child is struggling, but I want to get my child tested. The school district or the school, the charter school, private, public school, they're automatically going to provide their level of testing to see if that child qualifies for special education testing. That does not necessarily equate with dyslexia
right.
testing.
Right, that would be so under the IEP that they would create. So that,
exactly.
it's that structured kind
exactly.
of.
Exactly. So that's the difference, and that's why I suggest that when that letter is created, we want to ensure that it specifies dyslexia testing. And then go through that process. The school, there's a turnaround time. The school should honor that request for testing. And I will also share that some families, many that I care to express, have become frustrated because even after presenting that letter, there has been some pushback in terms of getting that specific type of testing done, which is why families tend to go outside of the school because they need an independent evaluation.
Is that because they don't have the resources internally to kind of facilitate that kind of, I would say, exam or whatever they need to take to kind of determine if they have dyslexia?
Yeah, that is a major part of the process. And I will share with you what many families do not know as well is that the school may say, and this is real life experience. This is feedback
right.
and just real life experience that I've received. The family has been told that we cannot provide, as the school, we cannot provide testing because we don't have the resources, we don't have the manpower, we don't have the financial resources or the human resources.
Mm.
However, it is mandated that the school provide access to that child being tested. So
okay.
if the ABC school district does not have the resources in-house, they should be willing to pay for that outside evaluation, that independent evaluation. And that can be done, and that should be done. And that's not coming from Dr. Campbell in the
yeah.
reading clinic. That is coming from the United States Department of Education. And this is what most families, they don't know this
yeah.
information.
So now, is there a protocol within, because I know that we obviously have been at events together. So usually, like a couple of the Secretary of Education was at. So is there a protocol in place for the state to know that resources like yours are out there for the school districts?
Well, I would hope that there is, but unfortunately, due to the conversations that I have with families on a day-to-day basis, there's just a lack of information and a lack of awareness. For instance, this letter has come from the United States Department of Education, but there are several districts in our wonderful state of Delaware mm. that don't even know this letter exists.
Okay.
There are several parents in districts, not even in Delaware and Pennsylvania, I mean, mm. all over that don't even know this letter exists. So it should be, and whatever that proper channel is to ensure that it gets to every single charter school, every single Catholic school, every
right.
single, you know, you see how
this
massive it is.
Here.
Exactly. The resources
well,
are there.
Well, I know, I mean, even as a community leader, and Seal and I both have kids that have, you know, ours have gone through the Appaquinic School District, which is amazing, but still there's resources that you're just not always aware of.
Exactly.
And I think that, you know, we have a responsibility to make sure, as does the school,
yes.
that these kids are successful and being given every opportunity to make sure they're successful.
Absolutely.
So if there's something as easy as a test that they could take mm-hmm. to see if they fall in the parameters, and it's not just, as you all said, something that we've been joking about because they said ookie instead of cookie when they were kids.
Exactly.
And then
they think it's cute baby talk.
Then they reclaim
right.
that, and when they get older, they realize it's a cookie, and
exactly.
more often than they want Milano. Like, then they have a specific one they want.
Exactly.
But so that transitions, but I would imagine that we all have that responsibility
well,
to make sure that those
exactly.
resources are
there. A lot of lay
there.
People don't realize that not every school has a diagnostician.
Absolutely. And that's what
yeah.
I was going to say also. And even You know, when I finished a reading specialist program at St. Joseph's University, a few years after that, they were cutting reading specialists in many states, specifically Pennsylvania, where I'm from. Mm-hmm. And so you have to wonder, you know, you have these colleges that have these phenomenal programs to prepare reading specialists, but they're not being hired in the school districts because the school districts are lacking funding and they had to cut them. Yeah. So that position is non-existent, whether it would be the educational diagnostician or the reading specialist.
Yeah. Well, I know usually school districts are very tight on statistics. They want statistics, they want support, they want documentation, mm-hmm. which I totally get. Even businesses want ROI. So I know that, for example, 12 years ago is when they changed as an educational kind of component to go from half-day kindergarten to full-day kindergarten.
Yes.
So my son happened to be in that class. So I know that they're going to be measuring quantitative and qualitative kind of data to determine whether or not this change had an impact on these particular students. So I know that like when this graduating class hits, they're going to be focusing on that. But I think especially with STEM, I know reading and math are the two things, English and math, ELA, English Language Arts, or whatever the schools use, are so important that they're something that students need all 4 years in high school to make sure that they graduate. And unfortunately, there's kids probably, you know, that may not meet those requirements. And had they had that inclination way earlier, I'm thinking some of these kids may impact the dropout rate that we have.
Absolutely.
A lot of those things. So.
Absolutely, yes. And this is why I impress upon you, advocacy is at the forefront of the reading clinic. Early intervention is so essential because you just want to connect with anything where there are any loopholes so you can start to intervene. You know, dyslexia is not the worst thing in the world, even if the diagnosis or identification is made, but we want to start early on. It's easier to help a person who has challenges when they're in first grade, even when they're in third and fourth grade, than it is when they're in ninth grade, when they're in 12th grade, when they're a freshman in college. It's not that you can't. It's just that you're dealing with levels of motivation or a lack of motivation, possibility of dropout rates, truancy, you know, so it just goes out of control at
and
a certain point.
People are wonderful animals. They learn how to hide and work around
the
all
coping
kinds of
mechanisms.
Little issues.
Yes. The coping mechanisms such as being the class clown or, you know, being sick all the time, stomach ache. Well, I won't say that they are faking that. That can manifest itself where it's real. But, you know, it starts out a lot of times as just acting. I just want to go to the nurse's office just to get out of the classroom because I know Ms. Jones is going to call on me to read aloud, and I don't want to do that.
Right.
So there are other things that children do behaviorally, and also it affects them in an emotional way.
Yeah, self-esteem,
anxiety,
all
self-esteem,
that.
Depression, absolutely.
So I guess the bottom line is, parents, you're the first line.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Parents,
wonderful parents.
Parents
yes.
and grandparents.
Yes.
We have
yes.
a lot of Rotarians out there listening from all around the world, and this is not something that's culturally specific.
No.
Absolutely.
So I think that we need to impress upon people, as you've been doing, that parents and grandparents are sometimes the first people to catch the issues.
Yes, they're the first teachers.
Go to the
yes,
schools,
absolutely.
Talk to the teachers, see if the teachers in the classrooms are seeing some similar issues.
Yes.
And then advocate. Right?
Absolutely.
And then for Rotary clubs locally here in Delaware in the Delmarva region that would like to have Dr. Campbell come out and speak to your Rotary Club, what is the best way for them to contact you or anybody that's interested in learning more about your program?
Sure.
How can they reach you?
The telephone number for the Reading Clinic is area code 302-832-1023. We are located in People's Plaza, building 1400, right behind the movie theater, across from Home Depot.
There you go.
On the first floor in suite 127. And our website address is www.readingclinicinc, Inc with spelled as I-N-C, .org. www.readingclinicinc.org.
And you have something coming up?
Yes. Well, we have something coming up where our initiative is focusing on Meet the Author. The Meet the Author initiative is specifically for dyslexia. I have come in contact with a wonderful gentleman who is dyslexic. He has a doctorate degree, and he is a author. He wrote his book called Dr. Dyslexia Dude. So he is super cool, and he is animated, and he comes out in costume.
And where is this going to be again, quick?
Well, the goal, we don't have a specific location right now. Where this is open to the state of Delaware, and we are going into wherever we're welcome to come into, but we're trying to form partnerships to help defray the cost of his flight, his airfare.
Yeah.
And the goal is for each child to walk away with a signed autographed copy of the book from Dr. Dyslexia Dude. So we're trying to form partnerships and sponsorships in the community to be able to provide that experience in Newcastle County, Kent County, and Sussex County. Daycare centers, churches, Rotary clubs, elementary schools, wherever children are present.
Awesome.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank yes.
Thanks
you.
For coming to the show.
Absolutely. Thank
Thanks.
You for having me.
You bet. Thanks for being with us this morning on Pathways to Service here on WDEL Radio. We are proud to broadcast this weekly program that focuses on the efforts of Rotary and other service organizations.
We would also like to thank our behind-the-scenes expert, WDEL's Jim Edwards, for his technical and editorial expertise. Join us next Sunday morning on WDEL Radio for the next edition of Pathways to Service. Please remember to email us any comments or suggestions at pathways@rotary7630.org. We would love to hear from you. This is Rotary Roadshow's hosts, Seal
and Roxanne, with a final good morning from Pathways to Service.